Hello, and welcome to A Murderous Affair. My name is Gabrielle, and this is the podcast where I talk about women in history known for mayhem and murder. This week, I was actually inspired by the Netflix documentary Lover, Stalker, Killer, and immediately fell down the rabbit hole of this case. Now, if you know this story, then you know who our woman of the week is. But for those of you guys who don't know about this case, I feel like the best way that I can tell you is to follow a similar format along with what they did in the documentary, because the reality of what actually happened is almost like unbelievable. I hope you guys enjoy it. Let me know what you think in the comments of wherever you're watching, and let's go ahead and get started. This whole thing starts with Dave Krupa. He met his now ex-partner, Amy, while working, and they had two children together. They were together for about 12 years before deciding to split, and ultimately it seems like they had an amicable relationship. In 2012, Amy tells him that she wants to go back to her hometown of Omaha, Nebraska to be close with her family, and he decides to move along with them to be with his kids, which, great dad move right there, honestly. Kind of shows like how they had such a good co-parenting relationship. He moves to Nebraska and gets a job working as a mechanic and starts settling into a life there. In the documentary, he talks about how as much as he loved being near his kids, it was hard because he was lonely. He had just gotten out of a long-term relationship. He was nowhere near ready to start getting back into a long-term relationship. And he decided to do what literally everyone does nowadays and join the online dating world. Of course, this was in like the early 2010s, and not as many people did online dating then as I feel like they do now. And he joined Plenty of Fish, which we all know now is garbage. But again, in early 2010s online dating, it was really one of the only platforms out there. He finds some luck there and talks to a few people and ends up casually dating two of them who are both looking for the same thing, namely nothing serious. You know, they went into this knowing it was a casual relationship. They were just there to, you know, pass the lonely nights together. One of the women was Shanna Liz Goliar, and one of the corners to our love triangle here. Again, he was upfront about what he was looking for, and she was all about it, totally looking for something more casual too. According to him, quote, "It was exactly the right mix. I had my personal space, but there was someone around if I wanted to chat or hang out. It was exactly what I needed at that part of my life." One day, Dave meets a woman who he describes as being like one of the most beautiful women he's ever seen when she brings her car into his work. They connected there, and it seemed like there was something kind of chemistry-wise going on between them, but ultimately Dave said, okay, I'm doing a service for her. It doesn't seem professional to hit on her while she's here at my job. So ultimately she left and they never expected to see each other again. Then Dave ends up matching with her online, and it seems like it was meant to be. Her name was Carrie Farver. So Carrie starts spending a lot of time with Dave. She's staying over at his place a lot more since it's close to her work, but ultimately they're both kind of keeping it really casual. Now, Carrie worked in, I think it was like software engineering, and she also had a son. So they kind of bonded together over co-parenting and raising children and got along really well. But then one of the worst things that could happen while you're dating multiple people happens. Dave and Carrie went out on a date, and while he was out, Liz had been texting him to try and come by and pick up some of her things. Now, throughout all of this, Liz was slowly but surely starting to kind of get more invested in this relationship, kind of hint that she wanted more than something casual, which Dave, again, was always very clear about. He wasn't looking for something serious. He wanted to keep it casual. If she was, then maybe it might be best if they end things. And then she would always backtrack. Anyway, so she's texting saying she wants to come by and get some of her things. And he's kind of responding saying, oh, I'm busy right now. It's not a good time. And gave her a time period where she could like come by and pick some stuff up. This time period just happened to fall with the time that Carrie ended up leaving Dave's apartment. And on the way out, Carrie and Liz run into each other, and they have a few seconds of extended eye contact, which is awkward. I mean, that's all it is, right? An awkward moment that happens sometimes in the dating world. You would think that's all that is. You would be wrong. A few weeks later, Carrie starts sending Dave messages about wanting to move in together, totally out of the blue. She's suddenly wanting to see him a lot more. And he reminded her that They had a more casual agreement, which made her blow up on him. She starts sending him threatening messages, talking about how his life would, quote, be ruined since he ruined hers. Ultimately, she ended it with a message saying that she never wanted to see him again. Soon, both Dave and Liz start getting threatening messages from Carrie. She uses a ton of different numbers and emails and just won't leave them alone. At this point, she's also quit her job and gone low contact with her family, including her mom and her son, which previously was completely unlike her. She makes posts on Facebook talking about betrayal and saying that she just needs space from everyone right now. She texts her mom saying that she had gotten a new job in a different city that she'd be moving to, and that for now, her son would be staying with her mother since she couldn't take him. So she basically just seemingly drops her son at his grandma's house and then takes off. It's at this point that her mom files a missing persons report, which the police end up ruling that her disappearance was due to a, quote, mental health crisis. She had a previous diagnosis of bipolar disorder, which was what led to this, and they wrote it off as basically her having a manic episode. So there's really nothing else her mom can do in this situation. On the other side of things, Dave and Liz have rekindled their relationship. When they do spend time together, they're bombarded by texts, emails, messages, through social media, you name it, all talking about how they were going to regret this, how they would be hurt, and etc. It would oftentimes also include what they were doing and pictures of places that they'd been, showing how they'd been followed. At one point, Dave got a video of Liz's car, as well as images from her backyard from Carrie. Included in this were also pictures of Liz's car being keyed up and the inside of her garage spray painted with the word whore. This is all really terrifying stuff. And with all of this, Dave went back to the police. In the documentary, he says, quote, I felt like Liz was being harassed because I dated this woman who's now making her life hell too. I felt like she was the real victim in all things, and I wanted to try and protect her. We felt safe together and our relationship rekindled. Now, after all this, when they start showing all this evidence of being stalked, police really start digging into this. The escalation, as well as the erratic behavior they notice, how she abandoned her son and refused to talk to anyone on the phone, it made them suspicious. Because up until this point, no one had physically talked to Carrie. They'd received messages from her, they'd heard from her via social media, but no one had physically talked to or seen her. In their investigation, they also notice a bunch of other weird stuff, like how she hasn't used her bank account at all, and how she constantly has new emails and phone numbers. In January of 2013, Dave told police how he had seen Carrie's car in a parking lot, and more reports were made since now Dave's ex-partner, Amy, was getting harassed as well as their kids. At one point, it was reported that her home windows had been smashed up and all the clothes that she owned were, quote, stabbed and slashed with a knife. Like murder style. All this combined was enough to arrest Carrie for stalking, but nobody could actually find her. In August of 2013, Liz's house was burned to the ground. Her pets were trapped inside and they died, and all of Liz's possessions were burned, like she lost everything. Luckily, she and her kids were okay, but at this point she left town. It's not directly said whether or not they blamed Carrie for this. It was proven to be arson, and at that point, main suspect was Carrie. Dave also left town. He changed his phone number immediately and did his best to continue on with his life. In doing so, he ended up getting back into online dating. And somehow, even on a new platform in a new city, Carrie found him and the stalking continued. In 2015, two Pottawatomie County Sheriff's Office investigators took more of an interest and really started digging into this. Mind you, this is 2 years after the initial reports, after the official investigation was opened. Ryan Avis and Jim Doty were the officers involved, and they took a look at everything. How nobody had actually talked or physically seen Carrie Farver in 2 years now. How she hadn't used any of her bank accounts and her house ended up being completely untouched since her last sighting. And all these things that were just really out of character for her. And they began thinking maybe it wasn't actually Carrie behind all of this. And in fact, she may not be alive at all. When I was watching this documentary, I definitely didn't see that coming. You know, maybe it's just because I have never heard of this case before, but when they presented that theory, I was in shock. And maybe it's just because I had never heard of this case before, but when they presented that evidence and that theory, I was in shock. The investigators end up getting this IT specialist to go through all these VPNs and IP addresses that were bouncing all over the world to try and trace the emails and basically all the messages that were coming off of social media, supposedly from Carrie. Eventually, they were able to track it down to an apartment in Council Bluffs, Iowa, where the owner, Todd Butterbaugh, told the officers that his on and off again girlfriend, Liz Golier, lived with him. Now, let's just let that sink in. Maybe that isn't as big of a revelation from people who kind of were just, I don't know, picking up more details than I was. But when that hit, I was shocked. I just could not believe it because it makes so much sense, I guess, once you think back on it. If this was a total personality change, like, it's just unbelievable. After that shock, the detectives realized that it was Liz Golier who had been impersonating Carrie Farber for years. She had been the one who had been sending the texts, the pictures, and she had even burned down her own house. Of course, this is a huge thing to have to prove. And again, it's not a theory that anyone expects to actually happen in real life. But now, things are beginning to unravel on Liz's end. One day, Dave came home to find that the gun he had bought for safety while all of this was happening had been stolen out of the safe in his closet. At the same time, Liz was meeting with the police because of this new harassment she had been getting, not from Carrie this time, but from Dave's ex-partner. She even said that his ex-partner had been threatening her with a stolen gun and described in detail the one that had been stolen from Dave. In her report to the police, she had even said that it was important that the investigators knew that Dave's gun had been stolen, something that even he hadn't reported yet. One day later, she called 911 to report that she'd been shot in the leg. She said that she didn't see the shooter and only heard one person, and that it was a female. Anyway, investigator Avis is quoted as saying, "I found it suspicious that the day before she felt the need to tell me that Dave Krupa's gun had been stolen, and less than 24 hours later, she is shot." Now, prior to this, in an overly ambitious move on her part, the day before, Golier had allowed the police to have access to her phone in order to prove the harassment that she was supposedly receiving. In addition to this, they wanted to see if they can find anything to indicate foul play or anything like that on her end. And in fact, they did find things. One of the first things was a photo of Carrie Farber's car, which was taken on Christmas Eve in 2012. Now, at this point, they had impounded her car because it had been found in that parking lot that Dave reported it at. When they searched her car again, they found one of Liz Golier's fingerprints on a container of mints that had been inside of the car's center console. They also installed a tracker into Liz's car, and after reviewing it, it showed that she had been circling Dave's ex-partner's house every single day. So at this point, this is enough to start building a case against Liz Golier. 2 weeks after the shooting, the investigators brought her in for more questioning, but this time they decided to try something different. They decided that they would pretend to go along with her story of the events and hopefully find out more details about what actually happened to Carrie Farber. So in the interviews, which you could also see clips of in the Lover Stalker Killer documentary, she is trying to convince the police to do more than just arrest the ex-partner for the shooting. And in response, the officers told her that they needed more proof it was the ex-partner who was actually behind the shooting and the harassment, and at this point they convinced Liz that they were on her side. So what she did is she began forwarding emails to the detectives that were supposedly from Dave's ex-partner and ended up having details about Carrie Farber's murder. The way it was framed was like almost as if Liz Golier was trying to frame Dave's ex-partner for Carrie's murder as a way to wrap up this whole situation. So instead of it being that, oh, it was Liz impersonating Carrie, she was going to try and pin it on Dave's ex-partner, the mother of his kids, say that it was actually her who had been behind it the whole time, and paint her as kind of like the jealous ex. But in the emails, they describe Carrie Farber being stabbed to death. They also describe many other things, like saying that she had been burned, that she'd been tossed in a dumpster, just really graphic things, but enough details that were plausible for police to start really bringing her in as this main suspect for her murder. Now, At this point, police had sent in evidence to labs to try and see if there was any blood or any kind of residue left over in Farver's car, and they did find a large pool of dried blood underneath the fabric of the passenger seat. And this, along with the fact that there was the fingerprint found, was enough evidence that they needed to arrest Liz Goliar with first-degree murder. There was never a body found, and to this day, Carrie Farver's body, as far as I'm aware, has never been found. And without having remains or a murder weapon, because they never found the murder weapon either, the verdict of whether she was guilty or not guilty could go either way. At this point, they turn again to Dave and ask him if there's any possible way he might have old electronics, you know, things that might contain evidence. And Dave was able to actually find an old tablet in his storage locker. On that tablet, on an SD card found, there were 11,000 previously deleted photos, which included selfies that Goliar had taken around the time that Carrie Farver had been missing. In one of those photos was a foot off of a dead body, and the tattoo on that foot matched the exact tattoo that Carrie Farver had. They were able to identify it in a photo that she had posted where you can see her wearing a dress or something, and you could see the tattoo on her foot. The case went to trial, and on December 16th, 2016, Liz Goliar was found guilty of first-degree murder. She was sentenced to life in prison with no chance of parole. In addition to this, she got another 18 to 20 years for trying to frame Carrie Farver for burning down her home, and she is currently in the Nebraska Correctional Center for Women. To this day, she maintains that she's innocent, despite all this evidence, despite the fact that they had the on and off again boyfriend testify that Liz had lived at the address where all the emails were coming from. And there's like kind of question on how much he knew and how much he was in on it, if he was covering for her in any way. You know, overall, it's pretty clear that she did in fact murder Carrie and then completely just destroyed her reputation afterwards. You know, her mom even says this too in the documentary. Everybody was viewing Carrie as someone she wasn't. Not only did you murder this woman, but then you just ultimately destroy her reputation and basically try to take over her life. There was actually an email found sent from Carrie's account after she had already been murdered by Liz, and it said that in her resignation, she was appointing her replacement was Shanna Goliar, who was going to come in and take over her job. I don't know if it was ever followed through about that, like if she ever actually got the job or not, because I can't imagine you could just be like, oh yeah, this is my replacement, and they would just hire them without doing an interview. But just the fact that Liz Goliar sent that. At this point, Dave Krupa is trying to keep a low profile, or he was until this documentary came out. I feel like it's hard to keep a low profile if you're the subject of a documentary. He says he doesn't give out his email, his phone number, and really struggles with the guilt of Carrie Farver's death. He says, I don't feel blameless at all this. A lot of bad things happen to good people, all because of a series of events that I'm at the center of. The woman that I've dated had goals and was smiley and wanted to do something. She was just trying to make her way in this world. I'm very sorry for what happened. If I hadn't met Carrie, she wouldn't have met Liz, and all of this wouldn't have happened. If I'd have known the choice was this craziness or tell Carrie I'm not interested, I would have told Carrie I'm not interested. But you don't get that choice. Which is gotta be hard for him too, because he was also at the center of this, and he was very upfront about what he wanted with both women. And it was just Liz Goliar had this obsession and wanted to be the center of his life and did everything she could to be that. And since having this documentary, obviously people have done deep dives into Liz Goliar and her life. Even before she went to prison, she was actually a prime suspect in the death of her son. So apparently her firstborn child had died under mysterious circumstances years before any of this with Dave Krupa happened. On January 29th, 1999, five-month-old Cody Goliar was taken to the hospital when it was found that he wasn't breathing. At this point, Liz Goliar was dating Glenn Hare and was living with him and his mother, and it was his mother who found the five-month-old Cody. Cody ended up dying a few hours later, and at the time, Liz Goliar and Glenn Hare were 21. And they were the only suspect. The autopsy revealed that the young boy had suffered a brain hemorrhage caused by violent shaking that likely lasted in excess of 20 seconds. So basically, shaken baby syndrome. And this is terrible. Like, shaken baby syndrome is probably one of the worst things that you can do to a baby. Glenn was questioned by police, and he said that occasionally he threw the baby in the air and caught him because it made the baby laugh. You know, at this point, when he was interviewed, he said he was super sleep deprived and admitted in the interview that, quote, he had learning difficulties suffering from a brain injury he suffered as a child. Hare's family said that they think it was a false confession. Ultimately, it was Glenn Hare who was found guilty and sentenced to nearly 9 years in prison, but the baby's father, Raymond, said that he believes that Liz wanted to get rid of their son so that she and Hare could be alone. There had been a parenting magazine found by the baby's bed. In it, an article about shaken baby syndrome had been saved. Of course, when asked about this on the stand, Goyer said that it was actually Glenn Hare who had done that, but it's enough to kind of make you suspicious on how involved was she in this as well. It's just wild to know, like, okay, so not your first run-in with the law and with murder. She was called in to testify against Glenn Hare because she allegedly received letters from him asking her to lie in court. She herself was the only person asked to verify that these documents were real and legitimate, and it was right after that she testified, a guilty plea for second-degree murder was entered by Glenn Hare. Both Glenn Hare's mom and Cody's biological dad say that they believe that Liz Goliard definitely forged the prison letters and that she was the one who actually killed her baby and then called Glenn and somehow convinced him to take the fall for her. Phyllis is interviewed and says, quote, I'm pretty sure she set Glenn up. She knew something was wrong with him before she left to work that morning. Nothing bad happened on the day he died, but nobody listened. They already had it down that it was Glenn that did it and they wanted to prove it no matter what. It was she who found Cody, and she said that he was typically a fussy baby who cried constantly, but was really quiet that morning. And I mean really quiet, she's quoted as saying, almost as if someone had drugged him. He didn't cry when I changed him. He didn't cry when we got him in and out of the car, so it was odd. After she returned home from grocery shopping, she went in to check on her son and the baby, and she said she looked at the baby and could tell just something was wrong. She realized he wasn't breathing, so her husband did CPR and she called the police, and when they got there, they just grabbed Cody and went straight to the hospital. They didn't wait for an ambulance or anything. You know, so in this whole thing, like, basically it's coming out saying that they truly believe that Liz Goliar framed her then boyfriend because she was unresponsive to her baby when he was crying. She didn't do anything. She never picked up her baby. Everyone else took care of the baby for her. She was a hands-off mom, and she really just didn't have anything to do with her baby. Since Carrie's death, her mom has helped set up a memorial scholarship at Iowa Western Community College. What it does is it's helping technology students like Carrie, and it was established to keep Carrie's memory and her legacy of kindness alive by supporting those students attending college who are trying to get a career in information technology. It's awarded yearly. It gives $1,000 out and goes to anybody who, whether a traditional or non-traditional student, who is enrolled to take IT courses at the IWCC. So her mom helped set up this scholarship, which is also available to donate to. So if anybody out there is interested in donating to this, you can check it out on the farverscholarship.org. So F-A-R-V-E-R scholarship.org. And it tells you more about it. That concludes what we're talking about this week. I would love to know what you guys think of it, if you've heard of this case before, if you haven't, if you watched the documentary on Netflix. I'll go ahead and leave links to all the places where I got this information down below, and yeah, I would love to hear what you guys think of it. This is one of those ones where it's hard to believe this actually happened in real life, and again, if you're interested in donating to the Carrie Farver Scholarship Fund, I'll leave that linked in the description down below too. That's all I have for you guys today. I would love to know what you thought of this episode. Let me know in the comments down below, or you can reach out to me on social media at Frumious Reads, FrumiousReads, and you can find me on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, Instagram, anywhere, and all the social medias. I have entirely too many. If you want to follow the podcast and stay up to date with whenever new episodes are released, usually try to come out 3 times a month, you could follow A Murderous Affair on Apple, Spotify, Google, Libsyn, Amazon, anywhere that you listen to podcasts. A Murderous Affair is there. But I want to thank you guys so much for listening, and stay spooky, friends. I'll talk to you guys next week. Goodbye.